Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up in just a few moments, standing on the shoulders of an ecumenical pioneer, the head of the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity recalls the legacy of Cardinal Johannes Willebrands. The new General Secretary of the World Council of Churches outlines his priorities and shares his hopes for greater cooperation between the different Christian communities. And salvation in non-Christian traditions. Dominican brothers and sisters come together to explore new ways of preaching the faith in an interreligious context. A giant of the ecumenical movement, a towering figure from the Second Vatican Council, a skilled and prudent diplomat, but also a mild-mannered and sensitive pastor. The late Dutch Cardinal Johannes Willebrands was all of these, but is perhaps best remembered for his pioneering work in the search for reconciliation amongst the divided Christian churches in the years following Vatican II. But his vocation and ecumenical vision began several decades earlier, as he saw Christians from different denominations coming together to help each other following the devastation of the Second World War.
And he brought together many people from Western Europe at this time and prepared the whole breaking through, which happened then under John 23rd and during the Second Vatican Council.
Cardinal Walter Kasper is the current head of the Council for Promoting Christian Unity, a post that Cardinal Willebrands held for 20 years from 1969.
We are still on the shoulders of such a very important figure. And when one reads what they have done during the Council, it's amazing, not only for ecumenism, for the decree for church unity, Unitatis et Integratio, but also for the declaration for the Jews, then for the dogmatic constitution for divine revelation, and also for religious freedom. This was also more or less in the hands of the Secretariat, which was practically a commission for the Council. And he was venerated by many bishops as a hero, because he was always not aggressive, he was a very mild man, but balanced, but he knew what to do, and he succeeded at the end. But then he left in 1989, and this is a year where the Wall of Berlin was brought down, and this means a new period started then. So it's a very important period. They built it up, the official ecumenism in the Catholic Church, but now we have a different situation. And if one reads texts from his time, you feel immediately that difference, but nevertheless, the fundamentals were laid by him, and it's very important. And he's also a very lovely person, very humorous person. He liked big cigars. He's Dutch, right? The Dutch likes it. And so he was calm, but he had his vision, and he was in very good terms, especially with Pope Paul VI, and there was a good collaboration between them, and so we rejoice that we have had him in this very important time of ecumenism. And for him, ecumenism was not only papers and meetings, but friendship. He was an artisan to have friendship and to have the right people with whom he could cooperate.
You were a very young man when he started working on this very courageous vision, as you say.
Yes.
What did he mean to you personally? Later you worked with him. How much did he inspire your work at a very personal level?
Well, I was very young during the Council. I was not here as a consultant. I had only 31 years old, and when all these things start, I knew him after the Council when we started with the dialogue with Lutherans. He was in Zurich when we started, and I met him first. And before I came then to Rome in 1999, I paid a visit to him in Netherlands and asked him a little bit. Well, he was already very old. He had a long-term memory, but not a short-term memory any longer, as many people. But he was very clear, and he told me many concrete things about his meetings. It's a very difficult time, a different time of the Iron Curtain and of the Cold War at this time. And so it's a different situation. But he was courageous and he made many things. Also the opening of the dialogue with the Orthodox in 1980. He was the first co-president from the Catholic side. So it's a big and important legacy. Courageous, but also the same very clever, prudent. It was a balance between both things, and so he succeeded. And I think that the decree about ecumenism by the Second Vatican Council was voted only with 11 voices against. It's also his success, his merit.
As you say, 20 years on now from the fall of the Berlin Wall, from the end of his ministry, if you like, there are many who would long to recapture that courageous vision that he had, despite, as you say, strong resistance from Rome, from the Curia. How do you think perhaps we can draw on his legacy to rediscover that courageous vision to go beyond the boundaries, the limitations of our current ecumenical situation?
Yes, it's very difficult to compare the times. It was a time of a new beginning during the Council. It was a springtime. We do not have it at this moment, and you cannot create it artificially. But I think we should see there was a man, or some man, together with Cardinal Pia, who had this courage and did something, and so we must do a similar thing in a very different situation. But the difference is, when he started, ecumenism was not so much acknowledged in the Catholic Church. Now, today, it's an official business, let me say, and it's clear we have these institutions, we have all these dialogues. But as you say, we need a new breakthrough, a new enthusiasm. And this is lacking at this time. But we have also different partners, especially in the Protestant world. They started the dialogue, for example, with the Anglicans. There was a lot of hope that we could reach something with the Anglicans at this time, and we were very close. But you know better than me the current situation of Anglicanism. We cannot do the same things now, even we have good relations with the Archbishop of Canterbury, very good personal relations. And so their situation has changed. Or some Protestant churches go very far in this more liberal direction with ethical problems. It was not the case at this time. So we have to cope with a different situation, but nevertheless, I think his spirit is much more alive than we think.
You've got a very important season of meetings coming up. You've got preparations for the new round of Archic talks with the Anglicans. Yes. You've got the meeting of the Joint Theological Commission with the Orthodox, a new General Secretary of the World Council of Churches. Where, perhaps, do you hope that the next breakthrough may be coming? What are your hopes for these next months?
Well, I think with the Orthodox we are on a good way, and it goes ahead. With the Protestant churches in general, I think it's much more important, not only important, the official dialogue with the churches as such. We will continue with it. But there are now, it's a network of relations between spiritual movements and religious orders and so on, from our side and from their side. And I think this is very hopeful. That's ecumenism on the basis. It's not official, it's more spiritual, charismatic and so on. And I have a great hope in this kind of networking, which is going on at this moment, at the Tese, Bose, and such kind of institutions, or the Focolarini, San Egidio, play a very important role in this. And I think some things grow together at this moment, which is not so visible. Paul Couturier, the father of the spiritual ecumenism, spoke of an invisible monastery. And I have the impression this invisible monastery becomes more and more visible, and it's growing. And that's my hope.
And my thanks there to Cardinal Walter Kasper, President of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. He's currently attending a conference in Utrecht on the legacy of the late Cardinal Johannes Willebrands. In other ecumenical news this week, the World Council of Churches has elected a new General Secretary. He's Norwegian Reverend Olaf Fixit-Veit. He takes over as head of the Geneva-based organisation in 4 months' time, but has already outlined his priorities for the coming years. They include building solidarity amongst the world's Christians, interfaith relations, deepening ecumenical connections, and cooperating on issues of justice and peace. I talked with Dr. Dwight just after his election to find out more about his expectations and the challenges he hopes to tackle over the coming years.
I'm quite convinced that the vision for the World Council of Churches, that we may pursue our work for unity, that we may all be one, is the main agenda. And then my challenge is to find ways that we can express that and work for that.
If you had to give an overall picture of the ecumenical movement at the moment, how would you characterize it? Many people talk at the moment about the ecumenical winter. Do you share that rather pessimistic vision?
You know that I'm as a Norwegian, I enjoy winter. But I know what they are saying when they are saying this. And there are signs that some of the strong work and some also the enthusiasm that was so remarkable and so strong some years ago may not be that apparent at the moment. I still think that the calling for the ecumenical movement, the great need for it, and also I think the deep commitment for it among a lot of people is still very strong.
Can I ask you where your own experience in this ecumenical work began, how you became so involved in this particular form of work?
Well, I think it has been several lines in my life. One is that I'm raised in a home where we had quite often missionaries visiting who told me about the church in other countries in the world and which made me very interested in getting to know the different churches but also how we are united, our common faith. And as a young man, I was... I was involved in student work where we had good collaboration with people from different confessions. But during my studies and also later on when I was called to take upon myself the job as ecumenical officer in our church, I also got into this as a work, as a job, which brought me into a lot of relations but also into a lot of studies and gave me a new insight of the richness of our Christian faith and Christian tradition. And my concern has been that we really use this and also that we find ways to empower one another with our different agendas in the ecumenical movement.
Can I ask also what particular contacts, particular links you've had with the Catholic Church regarding this ecumenical work?
Well, there are several points to be made. In my position I have in Norway today, we have a very good relationship with the Roman Catholic Church and the Bishop of Oslo, particularly. We have a joint commission working with them on a regular basis. I've been also involved in the confessional dialogue, I mean, between the Lutherans and the Catholics on a worldwide scene in the sense of reception, for example, when we as church received the joint declaration on the doctrine of justification. I was involved in our response and writing the response for our synod. And I also have a lot of very good personal relationships to Roman Catholics in Norway and elsewhere.
So you're hoping that perhaps a visit to the Vatican may be on the cards in the not too distant future?
I really hope so, and I would look forward to that.
The Catholic Church, as you know, is a member of the Faith and Order Commission, certain parts of the World Council of Churches, but not a full member of the Council. Would you like to see that changing?
I'm not ready to say anything about the formal relationship between the WCC and the Roman Catholic Church at this point, but I certainly hope that the type of relationship we have had working together on this important field of ecumenical dialogue in Faith and Order would be strengthened, and also that the joint commission, which is already working between the WCC and the Roman Catholic Church, can find ways to implement also some of the good results they have been working on.
Finally, there's been a lot of talk about how you're the youngest or one of the youngest leaders to be elected as General Secretary there at the Council. What difference do you think this makes, perhaps, moving on to a younger generation of ecumenical leaders?
Well, I hope that I can bring both the experiences and also the understanding of my generation and also the enthusiasm of my generation for what has been done, and also bring the questions of my generation and the younger generation into this work. Hopefully I also can motivate more people to be involved in an accountable way of working in the ecumenical movement.
My thanks there to Reverend Olaf Fikse-Tveit, the newly elected General Secretary of the World Council of Churches. Dominican brothers and sisters working in interfaith contexts in countries around the world have been meeting here in Rome this past week to explore new ways of preaching the faith in such multicultural settings. Participants at the meeting heard from experts on Islamic scripture and customs in particular, as they discussed the delicate questions of salvation in other religious traditions.
And many brothers and sisters come from very difficult regions in the world. The world needs to be saved. People need to be healed. There are situations of violence, of suffering, of troubles that need to get an answer. How our religious tradition can give an answer to this need, to this seek. And we try to develop a bit, to deepen this question.
One of the organizers of the five-day encounter was Father Claudio Monge, who has worked for many years on Catholic-Islamic dialogue in Istanbul.
One of the most important things that struck me during our sharing and discussion is that we discover more and more that we cannot anymore define our identity without others, because other, different in faith, in culture, in thinking, is fundamental to allow me to discover something more of my tradition. The other is not just a mirror, but is something different. And sometimes I get back an image of myself that is new, and I never discovered it before. Then I think that we need to go forward, because today it's very difficult to speak about otherness, because we fear. And in our society, we build, it's incredible, but more and more walls and separation, and especially in political and social politics. And I think that we need, from a theological point of view and even philosophical point of view, we need others to discover and to deepen our own identity.
Within the Dominican world, you have a particular vocation for the preaching of the word. How does this help you in this interfaith dialogue?
Yes, we spoke also how to preach today in an interfaith world, in society that are more and more multicultural and multi-religious society. And we discovered that probably we need to go back more and more to the wellspring of our faith, and especially I would like to say, as St. Peter said in the first letter, we need to give a sense of our hope, to explain to human beings why we hope in a not only in a better world, not only in a future better world, not only in a kingdom of heaven, but why we trust in human being, why we think that this humanity has a sense. Of course, for a Christian point of view, there is an answer very, very simple, very clear, because God himself became human. God himself was able to walk with human being. Because of this, we can say, we need to say louder probably today, that there is a sacred sense of human being, and we need to protect, to defend this value.
And yet this question, the incarnation at the heart of the Christian faith, is precisely one of the hardest things for those of other faiths. It's, if you like, the biggest obstacle to dialogue.
Yeah, I think so. More and more, historically, often we have a binary system. We speak about theological reflection for scholars, and after, time to time, we have a look to a concrete daily experience. It's not possible to divide both. And more we discover, even because many of us are both theologians living in intercultural places, and we discovered that we cannot separate the two moments. And very often we discover that, first of all, to create trusting relationship, we need to lead something before to speak. Secondly, we need to hear something. We need to give time to the other to express himself, his own research and own experience. And after, finally, to speak, maybe not really with our own words, but finding some small sentences of hope in the gospel himself, because we are witnesses of the gospel, not of ourselves, of course.
Your brothers and sisters here, aren't you, from the Dominican world? There's been talk about the important role that women can play, paradoxically, in these countries where women often have an inferior role to the men.
Yes, of course. It's so important for us to have a strong presence of women, that every time reminds to us that is very important to discover the right place to the women. That is a fundamental role in the society, in the dialogue, in a theological and Christian witness. We discover also that probably together our witness is stronger because human beings live, women and men together, and especially in Islamic countries, where women are more and more important, they try more and more to find a new place. They look at us with attention, because they know that probably in our Western Christian tradition there is a longer experience of this. Even if sometimes we need still to a long path to reach our goal of really rich sharing, not just to find a place for women that is a place of men, but the real place of a woman in the society, in the church, and so on.
Tell me a little bit about your own situation there in Turkey, how this interreligious dialogue is lived out in your own life there.
Since many years, Turkey is a very important laboratory of a possible life, multicultural and multireligious life. There is a long tradition, especially in the big city center of Turkey. I'm living in Istanbul, of course. It's a special world, if you want, Istanbul. Since a long, long time, because of history, because of many things, different traditions live and share together their experience. Of course, this is a time not so easy always. Even we know very well, Christians are really a minority, but even more minority than in Egypt or in some other countries, Muslim countries. And they still struggle to be recognized juridically, to have a dignity, not just as a minority, but as citizen, Turkish citizens, because we are convinced also that it's not just a question to find a place for an ethnical church, but is to find a place as citizens that are Christian believers in a country that is a modern country, democratic country officially, where most part of the citizens are Muslim believers. But together with them, we would like to contribute to build a new modern society.
We saw the Prime Minister Erdogan meeting with the Patriarch Bartholomew just a short while ago and promising, indeed, there would be these changes, there would be a better situation for minorities. What was your reaction to that?
There is something new. First of all, the Prime Minister with some other minister of his government met not only the Patriarch, Orthodox Patriarchs, but some other representative of religious minority and churches.
Including and Catholic?
No, not Catholic, but Armenians and Syrian church and Jews also. And for the first time, this meeting was not in Ankara and in official institution, but the Prime Minister himself moved to meet the religious minority authorities. This is something new. I think that is a sign, it was a very important sign, that Turkey would like to go forward also towards Europe. And this is something new. I think that we need to hope and not start immediately to think that probably attitude for media and to get more publicity. I think that there is something true, because since long time there is, I think, a quite deep political debate in Turkey concerning minorities, not just with something that is foreigners and is against the national unity, but something that is a richness for the countries. And this is something new. Turkey need to rediscover the richness of her own story, even through the troubles and the difficult time of this story, and to discover that I think that is not modern Turkey without diversity, without different cultures also, because it's an incredible Carrefour is an incredible
crossroads
of traditions, and this is a real the richness of this country.
Thanks there to Dominican Father Claudio Monge, who works on Catholic-Islamic dialogue in Istanbul. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus. Mm-hmm.